Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 97. Guys, we are so close to 100 and I don't know if we're going to make it. We'll get there eventually. Don't worry about it. I'm Alex. Here is Colin. You can hear Colin talking. What's up, Colin?
Well, not our score over Vegas.
Exactly. And also here, Ben. What's up, Ben?
My blood pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Do you like how I give a lot of enthusiasm when I introduce you, Ben, when I know you're going to have a really dark podcast?
I have a rant just brewing, so.
We've got many rants just brewing. We're going to mix up the format for this one a little bit, kind of like we have, if you haven't noticed, through most of these playoffs, which is instead of going through our normal, you know, kind of newsy segment and then game breakdown and whatever else, whatever rant Ben wants to go on and then three stars, we're just going to speak freely, I think, in here. Sharks, Vegas, if you are a Sharks fan, and you've been watching this series, you saw a not so appealing blowout in game one. You saw a nicer ish game in game two. And this series is kind of, you know, it's doing its little thing where it goes back and forth. Now, there are a couple of just general things, guys, that I really want to point out. One is, hi, Sorensen. I kind of love you.
Yeah.
Right? That guy's looked great.
Yeah, he's a nice bright spot. I mean, the fourth line, the whole like Scandinavian connection we got rolling there. It's great to watch. It's wonderful having that sort of depth. And Sorensen's finding his space, and he's awesome to watch. And I loved him driving the net.
He's not just finding his space, though, because he's making it, too. I mean, that guy, the way he's holding onto the puck and the way he's skating just across the larger series. That's, you know, tonight maybe not as beautiful as some of the other ones. I mean, every time he gets the puck, it looks electric. I agree with you, Colin. Obviously, you know, the fourth line, when you talk about needing four lines, our fourth line's been good. And Sorensen has been a huge part of that. But the other thing I also want to point out is, and Ben, I know you're gonna have thoughts on this because you've had thoughts on this all season, but Hurdle, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another guy who has, you know, we're talking about a guy who, you know, pretty much had his knees destroyed for several years straight, and you couldn't tell. I certainly couldn't tell.
No, I have a lot to say about Hurdle tonight. He's mostly been positive, right. And when he hasn't been positive, he has made up for it. So, I've said several times throughout this series that I feel like Hurdle and, to a lesser extent, Couture have taken this team on their back.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're going to have to do it again, based on what happened this week. So,
well, you know, let's I'm setting Ben up here. Also give a quick nod to DeBoer for giving Ryan two more minutes of skating time this game. You know, it's a strong coaching decision.
Well, that is another big theme of this series, was sort of in the beginning of the series and looking at the series against the Ducks, was, and the end of the season really, was the deployment of Martin over Ryan. And for the Ducks series, that worked out okay. Ducks are also a bigger, slower team.
Yeah, I think there's mostly what I would say about that as we're about to transition into game three, where Martin played a key role, that, you know, having a slower guy who's playing differently than he'd played most of the time he'd been with us just didn't end up hurting the Sharks by luck.
Yeah.
Virtue of opponent. Speed of the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, arguably you could say that it hadn't been a big deal in the first two games. It's hard to say when a team gets blown out 7-0 in the first game how much an individual pylon matters. And then game two was, you know, close fought, what have you, talked about that. But then we get to game three. There's your transition, Alex, that I stole.
Oh, as always, Ben. Sharks don't win this one, but it does go into overtime. Timo Meier opened scoring in the second period. Vegas, you know, then kind of scores three. And then Evander Kane and Tomáš Hertl in the third period. Ben, I'm going to pass that back to you because I know you've got thoughts on that that you were tying back into and you were just being polite.
What was funny in this game, you know, as you know, the Sharks did, you know, get out to a lead, which, you know, looked like it was going to be a good thing until they ended up chasing, you know, the game, the rest of this game and much of this series. It's funny, before the Kane goal and the Hurdle goal, each of those, I had tweeted basically, you know, with Kane, it was like, it sure would be nice to see Kane get into this series. He scores a goal. Yeah. It sure would be nice to see Hurdle, you know, make up for that boneheaded, because, you know, the power play goal that Colin Miller scored to tie the game in the first place came off of, you know, Hurdle making a really dumb decision to cross check. I think it was Neil in the head, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Behind the play, nowhere near the puck. He got caught doing it. It was dumb. Like, Hurdle does that once every 40 games. He had that boarding penalty earlier in the year that, you know, was really boarding, and he should have gotten a game misconduct for. And I don't know what gets into him, but I'd said, you know, would we really need Hurdle here to make up for his boo-boo? And he did. He tied it. And so this was an opportunity for the Sharks to go up 2-1 in this series. You know, in the previous game in OT, we'd seen the Sharks kind of not play particularly well in the first OT and then really drive play in the second. And the first OT kind of looked like first OT the previous game.
Yeah.
And turned on first, like Martin already had one play where he got into a foot race with a guy who was breaking into the zone. And I think Jones, you know, got a piece of that puck. And so Martin got lucky in essence on that one. And then probably the ugliest defensive play I've seen all year, both Martin and Burns. You know, first Martin turns the wrong way, then Burns gets caught, turns the wrong way, and just, you know, Carlson just rifled that shot past Jones. I don't think there was anything Jones could do about that on stick side. But this was, you know, largely what we'd been saying this whole time. The margin of error in these games is slim, and you can't afford to be putting a liability on the ice.
Yeah.
And the Sharks lost a game because of it.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree. I want to point something out real quick about Hurdle too. Just in general across this series that I've really noticed, his play behind the net has gotten really good this series, as far as like driving into the wall back there, keeping possession back there, and making plays that have come out and have really helped the Sharks get a lot of opportunities. And I really noticed it in that game. I noticed it in you know, games 2 and really 4 well.
I mean, I'd say he's been doing this the whole playoffs, and he doesn't pass as well as Jumbo does, but he has gotten to the point where his ability to protect the puck with his body and turn with the puck on his stick is as good as Jumbo's.
Which is great, because we're going to need that as Jumbo eventually transitions into the sunset at some point.
Hurdle's just been amazing along the boards all over the ice. He's this power forward now, and it's great. I don't know. Like, I don't know if we're shifting him properly. Like, I don't know if DeBoer's using the pieces he has right, or if we're just, you know, not showing up to certain games.
Well, I got to say that the thing that really frustrated me the most about this game is that the Sharks had a couple of, from the eye tests at least, really great opportunities. Fleury's been good, and you know, he absolutely robs
Kocher in OT.
Yeah. Yep. And like honestly, if not for that, you can argue whatever you want about Kocher's shot, that is still a hell of a save by Fleury and a hell of a read. Yep. If not for that, the series flips the other way, and we could have been going into tonight's game. It could have been 3-1 Sharks.
If Kocher elevates that shot an inch, an inch more, that puck's in. There's no goalie on the land in the land who stops that. And to answer your question, Colin, we have a coaching deficit against the Vegas Golden Knights, and it goes back to here's my mini rant. This isn't the rant I intended to go on, but here we go. Going into this series, DeBoer was asked, why not Ryan? Why not match speed with a slightly more agile player? And his response was, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'll let you all overthink the game. we've won four straight. And, you know, when this game happened and Martin shat away the game, I became as furious about that quote as I have, because DeBoer is paid to coach, and coaching is about matchups, and matchups aren't about superstition. They're about what players will give you the best opportunity to win a game.
That's crazy talk, Ben.
And by being the superstitious git that he is here, he cost the Sharks this game, period. End of story. His coaching cost the Sharks this game.
There's no way that's the end of your rant. That's the shortest rant you've ever gone
on. I've got more about his coaching later, but it's relevant to tonight's game.
Yeah, because I figured tonight's game was...
there's more. Example. Oh, there's more. I want to talk about pulling the goalie.
Yeah, me too.
But we'll save that.
We all have.
I thought we were the no format now, so we could just slide right into...
Let's not skip a game.
You can't do that, because that game's a good game. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's slip in and we can go.
This was a good game too. I mean,
I totally agree.
All the things that were good about this game. The Sharks scored the first goal. They scored it on a power play. They largely carried play in the second period when they just got a little bit unlucky and had some bad bounces and some lazy plays that led to goals against. Right, that is actually kind of the theme of this series. Has been lazy plays ending up in the back of their net.
Yeah.
That's been a mixture of Burns and Bodker primarily, right? But they fought back through that adversity. They tied the game. They tied the game with just minutes to go on a beautiful play by Hurdle in front of the net. I mean, just exactly what you need that power forward guy to do. Fight for the puck, squirt it past the goalie, you get into overtime, right?
Right.
So I don't want to completely take away from what the Sharks put on the ice in this game, because they earned better than they got. In other words, they earned better than what the situation DeBoer put them in by playing an orange pylon. And also, you know, this plays back to game two, right? Why is Martin on the ice in OT in game three?
Right.
Because he didn't play Martin in game one. That game went two OTs, and he murdered his guys.
Yeah, you cannot afford in a playoff scenario against a team like Vegas to be massively sheltering a player.
Exactly.
So if you're not going to be playing, if you don't have enough confidence, or that player doesn't have enough stamina or whatever it is to play the full game, and you have any other option who can play the full game, that's where you need to be looking in that situation. Unless that other option's skill level is so abysmally low, you don't have another choice. Because, I think in game two, Martin played 10 minutes?
11.
Yeah.
He played 11 minutes in a double OT game.
And all you're doing is to your point, Ben, you're burning out literally everybody else. And obviously, popping him in here when he did was to a fair degree to compensate for that.
Exactly. I mean, because he knew that he couldn't afford to shelter Martin in a second OT game because it would cost him down the road. So again, coaching decisions, they pile up. Bad coaching decisions like playing Martin piled up to the point where it cost them this game.
But isn't it a bad decision? Like, didn't we lose out on having Ryan better prepared to play?
That too. Please elaborate on that, Colin, because you're dead right in public.
So, okay. So the whole building and carrying forward in playoffs, every game you play, factors like three games down the road, and it's different hockey. I was watching the Canadian broadcast for this last game, and one of the marked differences in the Canadian broadcast is how they talk about filthy play. You have to get your players into the playoffs to experience this filthy play and to keep their head straight. Kane looking at you, and here's Ryan having to come in against the better team, having not gotten a warm-up against the worst team in a playoff environment, a worst team playing dirtier hockey, mind you.
There's something else to point out about that too, though, and it actually, this problem starts earlier than the playoffs, because down that end stretch, when we had the option to play Ryan and ensure that he was geared up to go for the playoffs, that's when Martin kind of came back into the lineup. Yep. And that choice at that point pretty much cemented you know, to a degree. Obviously, these are professionals. They're still practicing. You know, Ryan's still practicing with the team and all that. But pretty much cemented the idea that we were going to go into the playoffs with Martin against Ducks. And that, now, to be fair, playing against the Ducks specifically, Martin wasn't a bad option. Like that, there is logic to that. However, beyond the Ducks, we knew that we were going to be probably playing Vegas. We knew that after Vegas, it would either be the Jets or Nashville. All three of those teams are extremely fast.
Yep.
And if somehow we got by those teams, we're probably playing another really quick team in the Stanley Cup Finals. So what we basically did was we sacrificed our potential speed defense, I guess you could say. And him gaining experience for a first round matchup against the Ducks, which, in, you know, I don't know about you guys. When we were talking about who we were going to face, be it the Kings or the Ducks, I was comfortable against either one of them.
Yep.
They were not really my focus. So it was a little weird to employ the strategy that way, because it's like, that's not, I mean, obviously you can't look so far ahead that you're just overlooking your opponent. You can get beaten that way if you're stupid about it. But it seems to me like getting Ryan prepped and ready would have been 1,000 times better, even if we didn't sweep the Ducks, than being in a position where he's not quite up to speed. He hasn't played in a while, and we've got Martin against faster teams. And the other thing I really want to point out is how Vegas is playing, because this is really key. Yep. And the Sharks have tried to do bits and pieces of it, which I think is encouraging, because we typically, I don't think, had fast enough players to really execute it quite in the same way. But Vegas is basically doing two things. They are swarming on defense, and then in the transition, they are breaking wide, and they are basically doing one-time lateral passes to Jones's blocker. There's a couple of things going on there, and it's very tough to execute the way they're executing. So full kudos to Vegas. Like, look, they're a good team. For those of you who don't understand hockey strategy, we don't talk about it too in-depth here. We usually talk more about the analytical side of anything. But a lot of teams on defense, they'll run an overload. And the basic idea, there's a lot of different ways to run an overload. But the basic idea with an overload is you've got a guy who your entire defense is structured in a way, angled in a way, where you are basically forcing the offensive team to move the puck in a direction of your choosing, which you are then basically, you're basically baiting is what you're doing, forcing play to a side. If you're swarming, that's different. Swarming is a like really overly aggressive overload. And basically what you're doing is, instead of having, you know, one guy and a vertical line, like a fence, basically pushing the puck in a direction and trying to force the play in that area, instead, you are literally having every player more or less on the inside of the other team's players, basically all chasing the puck. The idea there is, instead of giving them one option that you are then going to, you know, steal out of or poach out of with a swarm, you're basically trying to take away all options. The hard thing about that is you have to have very high stamina. You have to have very smart awareness, and every player has to be pulling their weight, because if one player is out of position, the rest of that team is going to be wide open. And we've seen some of that when Vegas hasn't pulled that off well. It's where the Sharks have gotten a lot of opportunities. But the other interesting thing about the swarm is that because all of your players on the, when you're playing it on defense, are kind of clustered together, when there's a turnover, it creates odd man matchups going the other way. And that is when Vegas is starting to pull wide and they're pulling off, you know, their same play. If you go back and you watch, you know, the 7-0 loss, and really you watch any of these goals, most of these goals are coming off of that similar play. They're almost all started by that, you know, wide lateral one-timer to Jones' blocker side. And the thing that kind of gets me about it is, like, it's happened so often that in my mind, I don't know about you guys, it is potentially their usage of that offense is maybe the only thing more telegraphed than our power play strategy of just cycling the puck back to the point to Burns. But, you know, they're operating it extraordinarily well. And, you know, again, that's a fast team thing. So the only way to really fix and prevent that, you know, on offense is you've got to have great puck cycling, which I think the Sharks on and off have had. You've got to have players like Hurdle and Sorensen who, you know, you've seen, and Tierney as well, you've seen do those really sharp turns with the puck and stuff like that, which basically breaks the swarm apart. But also on defense, this is where I think like we run into big issues with a player like Martin. You know, basically when that transition is occurring, a lot of times that because the Sharks will be spread out wide, they're going to be behind the play. And so they're going to be chasing. And, you know, you saw that in that Carlson goal in this game where Martin can't catch up. You see in the next game when Ryan comes in, Ryan can catch up. And that makes a tremendous difference in how that operates. But I think, like, if you haven't noticed that yet, I highly suggest in the next game, because I don't think you're going to go back and watch it, just watch. Watch when the Sharks are in the offensive zone and watch what Vegas is doing and how all their players are basically like a swarm of bees all over that guy. Because it is overwhelming, and it's a strategy that's been around for a while. It's becoming more and more popular as the NHL becomes faster and puts less of an emphasis on, you know, checking lines and bruisers and enforcers. And I will say that the encouraging thing is that the Sharks have used it a couple of times as well. And this is the first time, I don't know about you guys, that I felt like the Sharks have had enough of those players to be able to pull that off. Which is super encouraging.
But we're also, I mean, let's give, whether it's our players or coaching, I'll leave it up to people to decide for themselves, but we're trying to defeat the swarm by having supported, like, you know, the triangle supported passing options and to, you know, assist the puck carrier enough that he can either shuffle it along the boards or get quick dumps for some sort of rapid cycle. But Vegas is just, yeah, they are running their system really well. And it seems like their coaching is just nailing their matchups in a really good way. That's opening up our weaknesses, which it's frustrating to watch.
Well, I mean, I don't even think they're necessarily exploiting anything the Sharks are doing. They're just a great coached team with great, smart players that they were, you know, by the virtue of the rules of their expansion draft, they were able to extort out of dumb teams like the Wild and the Panthers.
Yeah, I actually had a conversation with one of my buddies about this because he's not as into hockey, and he was when you mentioned the expansion draft and the players, Ben, he was asking, you know, man, that expansion franchise, why is their goalie doing so well? And I'm like, well, that goalie also just won the last two Stanley Cups. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they have a no one in goal. But also, Ben, to kind of touch on what you said about them playing well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, when I talked about like that sort of like really telegraphed one-time play that they keep doing, it's not easy to make that pass. And they're making that pass a lot. Like, they are a skilled team, and they execute really well. And I feel like one of the things that the Sharks are running up against is that the second the Sharks relax or they take a done penalty, regardless of whether or not the Sharks are controlling possession, regardless of whether or not they are, you know, just shooting like crazy, Vegas makes them pay. And they did that against the Kings as well. And I mean, obviously you want to be doing that, but like, they a lot of times have kind of like a surgical precision about them, and it's, you know, kudos to them, because, you know, I know I was certainly one of those guys, you know, in the beginning of the season was like, well, you know, I see their strategy and there's no way it's going to work out. And it kept working and kept working and kept working and kept working. And, you know, in watching, I think it in back-to-back, you know, consecutive games, you really do see how well they're coached and how well they're executing on the ice.
Yeah. And the thing that's frustrating is to have to respect your opponents, except for James Neal. And I like how Vegas is playing, and it's annoying to see, you know, see the matchup, see the line rolling, see them, you know, stick to their strategy and not so much, you know, pull a McClellan where it's system over everything. But as you're saying, they know what they need to do to beat, you know, Jones, or to perform to the standard that they want. And they just adjust in the small things. They open up their defense a little while transition to get in the lanes. They make those small little adjustments that is the coach's job to point out and drive the team towards while keeping their overall focus of the shots they want to set up happening as frequently as possible. So it's a good series so far. It's just I woke up really early for a less than great morning.
Why do you keep trying to jump ahead, Ben? Ben, let's go ahead and help Khan out here and move on to the move on to the next game. By the way, sure. I want to point two things out before I go into this game. The first is I had to watch game two during Monster Jam because we had gotten tickets forever ago for our kids. And I spent that game fumbling with my phone between the live feed and the radio. And I had to do it again for this game because I was at LAX and had the same problem. So I don't know if that's an omen or what, but we won both those games. So maybe I need to fumble with my phone more. The other thing I also want to point out, because this is going to be an interesting theme, I guess, for these two games, is that while I was in LA, a person on my crew had walked up to me and said, "Don't worry, man, the Sharks are going to get a shutout tonight." And I said, "I don't think so." Here we are. The Sharks got a shutout. They score four. Vegas scored zero. Marcus Sorensen opens the scoring in the first. Donskoy follows up about 4 minutes later. And then Hurdle scores in the second. Again, Sorensen and Hurdle. You're going to hear their names a lot. Also, this was the return of Donskoy, correct? Right?
Yep.
Why not? Forget, I'm not mixing that up. And it
wasn't expected. It was kind of last minute that he drew in.
Well, and they were kind of playing that whole, could it maybe be Thornton? Could it maybe be Donskoy in the lead up to that game? Just like they did with tonight's game. And then Joe Pavelski scores a power play goal in the third.
Ryan drew in after Martin's shitting of the bed.
Right. And that makes a huge difference. Huge difference in this game. Thoughts?
It was nice seeing all of our defensive lines being able to, all of our defensive players being able to keep up with the transition play.
I think a big part of this game, at least for the sections that I was able to catch in that really crappy streaming, was Sharks did a much better job. And this is going to sound like a small thing, but it's actually not, again, pointing out the way that Vegas has kind of exposed our D with that same play over and over again. Sharks were excellent about keeping their sticks on the ice and in the lane. And they were tipping a lot of those attempted passes, and that made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think that largely this is probably the one game in this series where the Sharks played structured from beginning to end of the game. They didn't get broken down by Vegas. I don't think Vegas played a particularly good game, but I don't think they played a bad game either. There weren't any of those. I mean, there were a couple of plays that we could call sort of that lazy play that often ends up in the back of the net. But when that happened, for example, you know, about 5 minutes to play in the first period, Ryan gets on his horse, gets his stick on Carrier's, you know, stick as he's carrying the puck and breaks up the play and nothing comes of it. Right.
Yep.
The Sharks really dominated this game defensively. And then they were in the right place to get goals offensively. If you look at the shot chart for this game, they really did keep the Golden Knights out of the middle of the ice. And the Sharks were just all over, like literally all over Fleury in this game. That said, like from a possession perspective, it was a very even game.
Yeah.
Vegas is still fast and strong and smart. And, Jones partly stole this game, right? Not that he was tested with a lot of tough shots the way he has been in other games or as many, but he still was on.
Yeah, and look at the goals we have to score, and I'll say it exactly like that. We have to score against Vegas, and you have to keep playing against them. You never ever ever get to just sort of sit back and say we've got a few. Let's just grind this out. And that's how we played the game. We just kept the foot on the gas, kept going.
Yep.
And like Sorensen's goal, I think, is the microcosm of why this game went well, because I mean he basically got the puck and just made a goal happen, and he's falling on his face doing it.
So I think there's another thing about this goal that is important to track for the rest of the series. Part of the way that Sorensen got away from the wall was a pretty subtle pick by Hurdle, which, by the way, when that was pointed out to the refs right away after this, the next, not the next shift, but very shortly after this, basically Boedker was called for a pick.
Yeah.
And you know, moving forward to tonight's game, Hurdle was called for a pick pretty much in the same way. So there, you know, the Sorensen goal was great, and him scoring that goal top shelf, falling over, was amazing. But, you know, the complaints about how this goal was scored has kind of changed the series a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was actually going to point out that, like, one of the biggest observations I had about this game was, and maybe they were doing it before and I didn't notice it as much, but the Sharks were picking a lot. Like, they got away with quite a few other ones. That helped create the space, I guess, that they needed. But if that, you know, when that gets called, you know, Vegas is dangerous.
So here's my question. Like, there's, you gave a key phrase there that is like the soul of NHL playoff hockey. When it gets called.
Sure.
Cause like, you know, if we want to go down and actually apply a rule book to playoff hockey, there's quite a bit, you know, in every series of every year where just miles and miles and miles of bullshit that one team likes to point to and say, hey, this is the reason we're having a hard time, you know, Penguins hooking and Stanley Cup final. Do we get to just raise our hands and say, hey, that's not okay? Or are we all just throwing our hands up being like, eh, you know, whatever the refs call, I guess that's
no, I know at least Ben and you and I have had the same take, which is that it the game ought to be called consistently throughout, yep. You know, like there shouldn't be different standards in the playoffs. But here's the thing, is it like, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying, Colin, and that's a very valid question. But the thing is that, like, I don't feel like you can bank on that, because part of the issue with the officiating in the playoffs is not that they just don't call as much. It's that when they it doesn't feel like there's a ton of consistency when they are. It depends on the ref.
Well,
crew, right?
I actually, there is consistency as to what they call and when.
Yeah.
And what that consistency is, and this has been shown in some studies recently, is even in the regular season, you see this, but you see it even more in the playoffs. They call penalties to keep things even. Quote-unquote.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So we're not going to – we didn't see that in the 4-0 game, but I'll give you a perfect example when we get to tonight's travesty.
Sure. But I guess my point is that, like, I wouldn't – as a coach or a player, I wouldn't feel comfortable banking on, well, it's loose now so I can just do whatever I want, or I can expose that. Because if they do start calling it, or you do get a crew that starts calling it, then you look like an idiot, right?
Well, I mean, I think what we do see, and we see it in a lot of playoff games, is that, you know, you'll see the game start, right? And right. Both teams will take some liberties to try right. to figure out what the refs are going to call.
Right, right.
That's what you see, right? Yeah. And then once one team figures that out by accidentally getting penalized for whatever it is, the slash, the hook, the trip, whatever, that is what it is. That team better fucking capitalize on that power play, because if they don't, immediately after this, the refs are going to be looking to even things up.
Yep. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's fair.
But here's the thing. There's the less seen keeping it even, where the refs realize they've missed a call or somebody got away with something, and then they start keeping the tally of, well, I've called a penalty on each team, but the, you know, team one got away with a pretty nasty slash that, right. You know, we didn't call. So I guess I've got to give one to team two.
Yeah. And the other coach just yelled at me about it.
I got to even that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, I mean, it's bad. And it essentially means if you can find the right niche of filth, you can exploit it to death. I mean, and I mean, we talked about board of player safety, because to me, that's where this sort of comes back to. And you get this department that it's, you know, the board of head hits that we don't like, really. And it's like, okay, so you get plays where a defender deliberately moves over to an opposing player and slashes him on the hands as a play begins. Mm. You know, post-game reviews exist for these sorts of actions. Something that, you know, maybe the refs didn't see. Maybe the refs felt Hurdle deserved it. which I also think is just a complete nonsense standard to say. But you have to have this, you have to have the league as a greater entity come in and sort of say, okay, yeah, in the flow of things, you got away with that, but that's not okay. And, you know, we don't see any of that consistency. We don't get any sort of regular script. As Ben said, it's let's figure out what flavor of nonsense we have today and then feast as much as possible.
And the problem is it fluctuates from ref crew to ref crew. And, yep. And, it's, yes. And you know, the ref crews rotate through the different games. Like they don't stay with a particular series. So, you know, it would be, I actually think it would be probably better if you did, if this crew is going to serve this particular series, they're going to do every night and they have their peccadilloes. So you can actually figure that out, right? You can figure that out in game one or two and you can adapt your game to that. You know, I mean, both teams could. The problem is that every ref crew has their own standard for pretty much everything. Slashing, hooking, tripping, roughing, when to step in, you know, whether to put a couple guys in the box to try to control the emotions, which, by the way, they failed to do tonight, and I felt like that led to some gross stuff later.
I mean, to our point earlier about how it's progressive, it's cumulative, the refs have lost, like, officiants have lost the series. And the league, like, to me, the playoffs always sort of hit a point where what the officials are calling doesn't matter anymore. It's how bad they let it get. And I feel like, you know, the series with the Sharks in Vegas has always sort of been right on that edge where it's either extremely high tempo, intense hockey end to end with everyone sort of having to be, you know, on point or else puck ends up in the net. That topples into a pit fight so easily because you have guys on top of each other all the time. You have guys working really hard. You've got, you know, sticks everywhere and one missed twitch, one, you know, extra aggressive lift, you know, somebody gets something into the face, it can just go, it can turn into a bloodbath really quick. And when the refs don't control that, people get hurt. Things start happening.
And I mean, here's the thing, like, I don't want to sound like we are blaming the refs for the outcomes of the games have happened in this series, because I don't want to be a Vegas Golden Knight podcaster or fan here, upset about that Perrin goal that was, I think it was Perrin, right, who dragged Jones's stick out of the crease. The Sharks have not lost a game in this series because of the refs. Period. No, they have not. We're mainly, you know, I think arguing that we'd like to, and again, I'd actually say this playoffs has been better than the past in terms of the refs being consistent and calling stuff. I don't know that this particular series is an exemplar of that as much as our first round series kind of was, keeping the Ducks in check.
I do want to interrupt and point out that if you've been watching the other games or the other series, they really don't like calling penalty shots.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
apparently you can hook from behind on breakaways and it's all good. Sorry. Yeah,
no, there's,
yeah, no,
there's
I just, you know,
all around.
I don't want to play the game of blame the refs. We're not doing that.
No, not at all.
And you know, this is even the wrong game to talk about that, because the Sharks played probably their best game of the series. They won 4-0. They dominated. They got pucks past Fleury. They, you know, Jones stood on his head on the few opportunities that, you know, the Golden Knights had. It was a prototype for what I think we hoped we would see tonight.
Yeah. And I know you're trying to hand me off, so I'm going to break that transition up, because why not? I've done it again. I do love. No. You teed that up, and now I'm the one screwing it up. But I do want to highlight that tempo point that Colin, you brought up, because one of the most amazing things and most fun things I think of this series has been that the tempo has been nuts for the most part. All of the fellow hockey fans that I know who have tuned into the series that, you know, hadn't seen these two teams play during the regular season have all pointed out how insanely fast and hyperactive these two teams look compared to some of the other, and all the series are pretty fast in general. But like,
I would actually, if I could, I would say that the Western Conference,
yeah,
the four finalists or semifinalists are all skilled and fast.
Yes.
Yeah,
like the games out here in the West are nutballs.
Nuts. Yeah. Yes,
in a way that makes me think whoever does come out of this conference is going to just steamroll.
Yeah,
whoever's left in the East, and
well, the East is just consuming itself. If you watch those series, like the decade-long grudges in those series are just coming out, and yeah, those teams are going to beat themselves up and get into the cup against a big, fast, scary as hell West team.
Yeah. Well, speaking of game five, because I blew that one. So remember how I mentioned my buddy that called a shark shutout? Well,
you're gonna kill this dude, right?
I am gonna kill him.
That was the promise.
Now when he called that, I told him, I go, look, I don't have OCD, but I will get stupid superstitious because it's sports and playoffs. And if you do that, I need you to show up at the same time. We gotta get back down to LA. You need to say the Sharks are going to get a shutout, because if you don't and we lose, I'm going to blame you. And he jokingly came by my office today and he said, I'm not going to call a shutout, but the Sharks will win 5-3. And I said, how dare you? Well, I have news for you, Matt. Sharks didn't win this 5-3, but Vegas did.
Sorry, Matt. Time to die.
Yeah. This game after a pretty back and forth first period.
Yeah. And even not just back and forth.
Yes,
let's be clear here.
Yes.
Until the last 2 minutes, the Sharks were in this game physically and competitively. And then
With three
they started coasting, and you could see what was coming from there.
Yes, exactly. With 3 seconds left, Neil scores, and that kind of sets the mood going into the locker room, I guess you could say. In the second period, Vegas scores two more goals. In the third period, about halfway through the period, they score their fourth goal. And I know what you're thinking, because Ben wrote the exact same thing. Screw this game.
Did?
Because Ben said that. See, Ben is my counteractive superstition.
I don't think I said that. I think Colin said that.
Well, you thought it. Come on.
It should. I mean, it typically would be me, but I actually decided, to keep watching this one since we had to podcast.
Well, yeah,
man, you're messing up my superstitious powers. Anyways, the Sharks battle back here in the second half of the third. Goal from Kevin LeBanc, a goal from Tomas Hertl, a goal from Bodker, and then the Sharks do something interesting. Now, here's the thing. We're all gonna rant. But let me point one thing out before any of us go off on the rant, because I know we all think pretty much the same thing about what occurred next. There was an icing call. That is important to note, because if you don't note that, it makes the strategy seem maybe a little bit weirder. But basically with 2:23 left, DeBoer pulls Dell. Dell had come into the game basically after the fourth goal.
Yep.
There's an icing call. So the puck goes back in the Vegas zone. Well, most of the Sharks starters had not played the previous shift, or not starters, but what you would normally consider star players or whatever you want to consider them, hadn't played that shift. And so he makes the decision to pull the goalie in order to get the extra attacker, because he knows that Vegas is going to be tired, because obviously on an icing, they can't change their line. Now, the idea there is you want to create this, and he's thinking this could, it's a gamble, but it could potentially be an insane line mismatch. But Ben, go ahead and rant now.
Okay. So I think to lead into my rant, we need to recognize what the Sharks managed to do in getting back to 4-3, which is, first of all, they drew a penalty, a great penalty to, basically open up LeBanc getting a power play goal to get out of the shutout situation, right? And then they continued to push at 5-on-5, and in this, here's the thing: the Sharks did not deserve to win this game.
No.
Period.
Right.
They were outplayed by Vegas from the end. 2 minutes to go in the first period on, they were down 1-0. They didn't really seem to push harder. They're down 2-0. Vegas actually managed to you know, open the gap of shot attempts and push play. Right. They're down 3-0, and they still largely didn't really push back. It's only once it's 4-0 that you see the Sharks sort of start to really push. And you know, it's arguable that part of that is also Vegas is just like, you know what, we can't possibly lose a 4-0 game. So let's conserve energy for game 6. But you know, the Sharks draw a penalty after some great pressure in the offensive zone. You know, LeBanc gets his goal. It's great to see him actually shoot the puck, because that's, you know, pretty rare. You continue to push, and what do you know? You get a goal from Hurdle. Great. Continue to push, and what do you know? That same line, I've been arguing has been the Sharks, you know, best line, put this team on their shoulders, managed to get Bodker a goal. So he makes up for giving up the lazy play that led to goal 2. I'm pretty sure it was. Yep. When he failed to clear the zone with a really terrible backhand chip against the boards. And now you're in range, right? And the Sharks continue to push. Vegas did an okay job of pushing back a little bit, but you're 2 minutes and was it 24? I thought it was 2 minutes and 12 seconds left, but
oh,
whatever.
Maybe I had that off. Close. Yeah.
Regardless, here's my problem. You've scored 3 goals in 10 minutes without sacrificing, you know, bodies, right? And every coach in the league has, like, it feels to me, has this number in their head. This is the moment I pull my goalie. 2 minutes, 1 minute left, whatever. It's like every, with fucking Patrick Waugh, it was 5 minutes left in yeah. the game because that guy was nuts. Geez. And, you know, there's some argument that analytics departments within each of the teams has basically told the coach, this is where you have to pull the goalie to get that 8% extra chance that you're going to score. Whatever, right? Regular season game, you do that by rote. You've got Vegas on their heels, and this is a team that is facing playoff adversity for the first time. Maybe second time this series, but really for the first time. They've given up 3 goals in 10 minutes. They're questioning.
Yep.
If there is one fucking time that if you're a good coach, you maybe think perhaps this isn't the time to give that young team back on its heels a shot at an open goddamn net.
Well, and also, Ben, if I may add to that, with the same frustrated tone that you're using, this is a team that has bitten you several times on the counterattack.
Yeah. Give your top line a chance to take advantage of that tired team without also risking the winning goal. And you've got another minute and a half period, or at least after that group has its chance.
But you have the possibility to grind that line, the defending line, down even more by forcing more icing with your goalie in the net. I mean, and the worst part is the thing that absolutely destroys me, and this is like, okay, it's a coaching decision to pull the goalie, but a coach should understand that when you've got a team on its heels, you don't open a window and say, hey, by the way, let's just change the dynamic for you so that this thing you're not able to deal with is now something you can understand.
It's a thing that again, talking about DeBoer, he makes the decision you can't criticize, right? The decision that every other coach in the league is going to make. He, you know, plays the hot hand. He pulls the goalie when it's time to pull the goalie without thinking about, is playing the hot hand actually the right call for my team? Is pulling the goalie actually the right thing to do in this moment? Or is it just the thing where I can go, I played the percentages. I did what everybody else does. I'm a great coach. Yeah. It's what I do.
Like, DeBoer is a traditionalist, and ideally he wants to play players who were born when that tradition was founded. And it's like... I mean,
and by the way, that's the scary part, right?
Yeah.
Now that the Sharks have lost 2 of 3 and, you know, this one in not great fashion, and you know, Ryan didn't get a huge opportunity to play in this game either because he's the guy who gets sheltered. How much you want to bet Martin draws back in for game 6?
Oh, I don't want to take that bet.
Oh, do you think Jumbo draws in for game 6?
Yeah, that's a possibility too. Also, and I have not been able to confirm this. I'm hearing from folks who watched the telecast that Kocher was helped off the ice after
Yeah, he was.
and yeah, like could not put weight on a knee.
Yeah, left leg.
And that's it, right? If Kocher's out, you might Jumbo's as well work in these guys.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing that drove me, and I know this is a weird way to think, but I think I couldn't help but think it. If the Sharks lose 5-3 because they pull their goalie with a minute or less left, I don't really bat an eye at that strategy.
No.
Agreed.
Because they did, it is now the focal point for me. Not that DeBoer needs to care about what I think, but it was just one of those things where you saw it and you go, look, I get why you're doing it and there's logic there, but that's not the right call. Like, it's not going to be the right call.
I'm not even that nice. It's an unforgivable sin. You have completely changed the tone of a game you were starting to win.
Yeah, you opened up a door. You opened up a door, as Colin put the metaphor absolutely right. Like I don't like 6-on-5 in the first place. I know you don't either, Alex, because it clogs the ice. It's allegedly, like the stats show, it's a +8% maybe bump.
Over what collection though?
Over like all 6-on-5s, yeah. like ever, yeah. Right?
And so for people who aren't stats types, there's times when you want a large horde of data points to say, okay, this is what the landscape looks like. But that doesn't mean that you are going to get that 8%. You know, it's having a kid.
I agree, and I'm not trying to justify it because, again, I thoroughly disagree with the decision as well.
Yeah.
But when I say there's logic there, you're talking about – so again, the Vegas team's using a swarm. If you can win this faceoff and you can keep it on the perimeter, I totally agree. You clog, but here's the thing. Because it is an ice – I think if it's not an icing faceoff, that's probably a very different situation.
Yeah, who knows?
Because it is. But because it is, he's banking. And I agree, change tempo and all that stuff. Totally agree. He's banking on Vegas being exhausted. And here's the thing.
If they're exhausted,
they weren't exhausted enough.
No, they were never exhausted.
If they're exhausted, you know, you don't need to go 6-on-5.
No.
Right.
And the problem is that, you know, also to this is the shot that was, or the pass that was attempted was the wrong move here too. Like DeMelo had that puck along the wall and he decided to pass it into like the swarm.
Yep.
You put that puck on net. How have the Sharks scored their important goals in this series? It hasn't been passing across through the swarm. It's been putting a puck on net and letting a guy like Hurdle or Bodker dig it out and put it over Fleury when he goes, you know, down to stop the initial shot.
And
you know, if you are going to pull the goalie, fucking take a timeout.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually a really good point.
Take a time out and talk to the team about this is what you have to do right here.
Yeah.
Puck on net. No matter what, the way we've beaten Fleury, and now instead you're down 3-2 and you may be missing your second best player.
So
stick a fork in this team if that's true.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point. During the broadcast, during the first intermission, one of the casters made the really good point that DeBoer didn't try to slow the game down when the Sharks went down 4-0. Like, he flat out said, the second that goal scored, I call timeout, and I just say, hey, take a breath. Let's get this thing sorted. DeBoer didn't take the timeout when he decided to pull the goalie either because, you know, as you guys are saying, oh, they're tired. No, this is not a team that gets tired. This is the team that lets the tired guys sit and put the guys who are fresh on and rolls their team until they win. So the timeout helps you who are trying to set up a specific scenario more than it's helping the guys who you think are tired, who, by the way, basically have just been sprinting past you whenever you
get it. I mean, that's the problem with, like, again, pulling the goalie where they did. Right? Because you want to keep the tired team on the ice. You don't have the opportunity to then call the timeout, diagram a play, reassure the guys, or not reassure the guys, but coach them as to what you want, right? Which is, as we've talked about it, I'm actually even more furious about this decision to pull the goalie here.
I can tell.
because it, yeah, whatever. I mean,
it makes sense in the delegation of responsibility, you know, coaching style. You know, I did it because it was a thing that's been done.
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, I want to be clear.
I've seen worse scenarios for coaches to pull goalies. And again, I'm not defending the call because I 200% agree with you guys. It was stupid. And yeah. And DeBoer needs to really stop and think about what he is doing with the team at any given moment. It can't just be, Ben, to your point, it can't be, you know, what is, you know, just the time. And by the way, it's not like he's pulled a goalie a 2 minutes often. So I don't necessarily think that's, you know, for him, that's a sort of proof of time.
Funnily, it's almost like he overthought the decision.
Yeah. I totally agree. So he's actually overcoaching in that moment.
Right. He's like, oh, this is it. This is the perfect time. I'm going to be clever. And it's like, you don't want to be clever.
Yeah.
And again, I want to go back to my original point about this game. If the Sharks had tied the game here, and if the Sharks had gone ahead and actually managed to win the game, it's not a game they actually deserved to win.
No. Right.
This is the game that Vegas absolutely deserved to win and come back to San Jose with a series lead. They were the better team throughout the second and third period. You know, the Sharks finally, you know, did get some pressure and got some good looks and got some lucky bounces. Let's be honest. I mean, Bodker getting that puck on his stick is as lucky as, let's say, Neil getting the puck on his stick for the first goal through Dylan, essentially. Right.
Well, you know, it's as lucky as the DeBoer skating Sorensen this season.
Yeah. So that said, here we come. We're coming back home. Who knows what's wrong with Couture. There is some conjecture that it was just a skate issue, but that sounds like a team excuse to me.
I mean, damn, you're making me want to go rewatch it right now.
Ben, I mean, I'm gonna go rewatch the DVR of it when we're done here.
Ben, can I ask you well, and Colin, you as well, but I think this is a question. I don't know if you guys have gotten this a lot, but from my playoff only watching hockey friends, mm-hmm. Vegas next year, right? They got a lot of UFAs. They got a lot of RFAs. In your minds, is this sort of you better win this now, or you guys are going to be in for something? So, you know, a decline moving forward, or because, you know, when we talked about the Vegas at the beginning of the season, we all kind of talked about what it seemed like their strategy was, right? Which was in a lot of ways a hoard defense and goaltending players, which they ended up using most of, to be honest. And then, you know, hung them off to build so that they would be, you know, ultra competitive for like a 5-year period. Now they're in a position where, they may move on to the Western Conference Finals. If they do, they have a good shot at moving on to a Stanley Cup Final. But then you look and, you know, like literally half their team, if not a little more than half the team, are UFAs and RFAs.
I actually don't think it's that bad for them. I think they're going to be great next year. And unfortunately, I think they're going to be challenging some teams for some UFA guys. Because here's who's coming off their books, right? Grabowski, he's not fucking playing.
Nope.
Right?
There's one. James Neal. They have a chance to re-sign him. If he wants to be here, he can be here. Perrin, same deal, right? Like, so there's two guys that you want to maybe put some money into. Neil's making five. Okay, what does he get a raise to? Seven? Whatever. Sign him. Mm-hmm. Perrin? Yeah. Perrin's going to re-sign for four. Fine. Ryan Reeves? Who gives a shit? William Karlsson? RFA. You can probably get a decent deal. Maybe you buy a couple years of his UFA period, so you pay him, what, four? Four and a half?
Right.
Fine. You've got team control because he's an RFA. That's the guy that's scary, right?
Yeah.
That's the guy who's had the huge year. Yes, his shooting percentage is going to come down next year and he's not going to score 40 goals, but whatever. You want that guy on your team. Then you got William Carrier. Who gives a shit? That guy's a thug. You keep him or you don't. Tomasz Nosek?
I love fired up Ben Collins.
Tomasz Nosek? Who gives a shit? And then look at the defense. Who are the two guys coming off UFA? Lucas Sabisa and Clayton Stoner. Lucas Sabisa is fucking Kevin Bieksa disguised. Let him go. Right?
Clayton Stoner?
Who gives a shit? Colin Miller? RFA. Pay the guy, right?
Yeah.
And then Shea Theodore? RFA and only 22. You've got team control. You're not paying that guy more than $2 million a year. So they're in great shape. They're only at $68 million. The cap's going up to $8 million. They can keep their guys. They can make a run for Tavares.
Yeah.
They're going to be fine. they're in arguably better shape than the Sharks.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's my perspective on Vegas.
I mean, they're definitely in better shape in terms of their draft potential.
Now I just
well, it's worth pointing out that they've done a great job at accumulating lots of picks for 2018 and 2019 as well. So, yeah. You know, while I don't think 2018 is, you know, as strong a draft as we've seen in the last couple of years, they, you know, where they need to restock or at least build a system, they have the capability to do so.
And as Ben's saying, they have the cap and they have the movable pieces that during a draft they can shift up, they can shift down, yeah, they can pull too. More yes. picks next year. I mean,
so right. I mean, they've got guys that are going to be huge value. I mean, they can do whatever. I mean, Tomáš Tatar is not even playing, and that guy makes $5.3 million. Find some stupid team to take him off your hands.
Yeah, they can sell. I mean, they're basically selling high.
Yeah. I mean, you've got David Clarkson sitting on your roster. If you can find a team to take him who needs to get to the salary floor, like Arizona, I mean, look, yeah. That's the thing. And I'll say it again. Vegas is where they are. Because first of all, they were given just amazing opportunities to build a team for now.
Right.
That previous expansion teams weren't given.
Real quick. Yeah. Thank you. Let's specify.
We need to say that. But yeah. They also approached the draft in a way, the expansion draft in a way that no other team was able to, but also in the correct. Smartest way possible. They extorted teams. They made teams panic. Now Seattle's not going to be able to do this.
Yeah, right. That was going to be my the next question to bring up is
because the Wild will never do what they did for Dumba again.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Giving up Tuck and Holla for a single defenseman is like
whoops.
It may have made sense in the moment, but it's clearly been the dumbest thing possible.
Do you think Ben that the NHL is going to operate the expansion draft in the same way?
Yes.
Given that yes. they have yes, right, and I totally agree because when you look at it, it's smart for them, right? You instantly have an expansion team that is competitive, and especially you know the genius part about that. By the way, I know a lot of people like to complain about it, and I get the grievances for sure. The Sharks had a really screwy expansion, for example. But we were basically a split. But the thing is that like Vegas was a non-traditional hockey market. So even though there's a lot of casino money and they knew that was going to filter in and a lot of other, you know, there were a lot of other opportunities for the team and that's why they put them there. They also knew that this team needed to be competitive relatively quickly.
And this draft
was designed to do it. And now you look at it and you go, hey, other expansion franchises, why do we need to be in a situation where expansion franchises are failures for 5, 8, you know, however many years while they build slowly?
Let me be clear here too. This is better for hockey.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is better for the NHL. Having an expansion team that can be successful right out of the bat. You know, it's bad for the existing teams, except the huge amount of money that comes into the league from expansion, right? That pushes up the cap. But the decision they made in Vegas, look, we cannot afford, the league cannot afford to have more Arizonas.
No.
Teams that weren't, never really got good. And granted, that was a team that moved, but
hey,
you know what
hey,
I mean, right?
Hey, the only way that Seattle doesn't get a super advantage is if somehow the NHL decides to just give up on Arizona and send them up there instead, so they don't.
I mean, but they're not, right? They want the expansion fee.
They want it all.
So, to be honest, I think it's actually really good for the league. I think the amount of money they get from the ownership, obviously that has benefits throughout the league.
Yeah.
Second, having teams come in and be successful immediately, it establishes a fan base.
Absolutely.
Like Sharks fans, and again, I only came in 2005. You guys know what this was really like. This team was tough to follow in the first couple
Power
of
years. Power Palace.
Yeah, you know what really saved this team, and I know I point this out a lot, but it's absolutely true, is that and I love the Sharks, and I love all of our fans, but the reality is, if the Sharks didn't pop up in the 90s, I believe, when rollerblading was huge and every kid had a cheap pair of skates and a stick, that's a much harder sell. Like, if the Sharks were expansion team today, much harder sell.
We'd be gone. We'd be gone in, like, 3 years. I mean, the Sharks are a miracle. Especially look at the contemporary teams that came in the league after and around the Sharks. So Anaheim's successful, sure. But Atlanta, gone. I mean, again, like a team that moved, but whatever. No, they were an expansion team, right? They weren't Winnipeg.
Atlanta was an expansion team, but Atlanta had the Flames long before Calgary.
Atlanta gone. Carolina, trash fire. Columbus, trash fire. Florida, up and down, but mostly a trash fire, except for the 1 year they won the cup, right?
Yeah.
This is the right thing to do for the league. It sucks because these teams leapfrog other teams that have had to do things the traditional way, like the Sharks.
Yep.
But it's best for the league.
Can I point out one other thing, which I was going to point out, but I'm going to give a shout out to Jacob, who's listening and writing live. Yeah. He points out the narrative is so good for hockey. And that's true, because I'll tell you what, right now, you know, unless you are a hockey fan, typically in the playoffs, you're not really hearing about hockey. And I can tell you right now, for all of those people that are following the NBA playoffs right now, that are checking in the SportsCenter for you know, baseball or NFL, you know, scouting and draft news and all that crap, they are getting the look at this Vegas expansion franchise. They're getting NHL news when they normally wouldn't. So as annoying as that is for all of us NHL fans, because it's super annoying, it's also good.
Yep. And you know, Seattle deserves a great franchise. I mean, we want another great Pacific Division rival, right? I think, anyway. I mean, why not, right? It's, first of all,
I'm just wondering what Seattle ever did for anybody.
The more teams in the Pacific, the easier travel is for the Sharks.
That I do want.
Right? And that's good for everybody in the Pacific, for my opinion.
I want a Seattle team because I want Vancouver to finally get to have, like, a neighbor rival, you know, like all the other Canadian brothers have.
No Metropolitans. No, thank you. Get out of here, seals and whales. Come on now.
Yeah. But anyway, like I would love to destroy the Vegas narrative. I would love for the Sharks to take game 6 and game 7 and move on to the next round. That obviously is what I want, because it is kind of obnoxious that this, you know, this team has been so successful so fast and their fans are kind of assholes. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Because they just don't know any better. They don't know what it's like to actually suffer. And I wouldn't mind seeing
what happens. Everyone says that about everyone's fans, but it's also true in this case.
Well, I mean, it's also, in my mind, it's a tourist fan base. It's a bunch of people who have the investment of...
They were Kings fans last year, let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. These are... And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's some people who, you know, living in Vegas who are actually, like, happy to have a local team and they're cheering for their local team.
Yeah, the poker players, like Daniel Negreanu.
You see it when you see their games. And again, I'm not criticizing the Vegas hockey fans, because that's, you know, Outlaws, former Outlaws fans is in there as well. But, like, when you watch a Vegas game and you see all the crowd shots, it's like... It doesn't matter whether it's the playoffs or not. You saw all season, it was like half the arena would be Vegas fans, and then half the arena would be, you know, tourists from other NHL cities who were in town. And don't get me wrong, that's also great because, you know, the NHL, that's fun. The NHL needs that, and they need that for that franchise. Yep. But you notice it. Like when the Sharks, the funny thing that I noticed was you had all these big pregame, you know, cheesy theatrics in Vegas, and that's, you know, whatever, that's their thing, latch onto it. But you could hear the difference on the telecasts and on the radio casts when they got back to San Jose, because the Shark Tank is loud and it is full of fans. I mean, there have been a lot of Vegas fans that you've seen in the crowd that have traveled, which I also think is great, but like you can hear the difference.
Yep. No, the Tank is notoriously hard to play in. Players do not like visiting it, especially in playoffs.
Yeah, our taxes are so high. What are they going to spend money on their off day?
Oh, jeez. I mean, as a fan, the Tank is just amazing. I've been to games here in Sweden where it's like the polar opposite arenas to the Tank that'll be half full, and I feel like I'm watching cricket or something. It's not fun.
Well, Swedes are so reserved as is. Here's
yeah, why don't you look at the scorecard, buddy, and let me know how the Swedes are doing.
I think the point is, I think there are some Sharks fans who are a little bit bitter about the way the series is going and about the way Vegas fans are dealing with things, and I think it's to some extent fair. Vegas fans, they don't really many of them are new to hockey. Many of them were Kings fans before this. They haven't really earned where they are. Right. Not the organization. The organization has absolutely earned by the effort that they've put into piecing this together. This team as smartly as they did. They've earned this, but the fans have not. And by contrast, like here we are, you know, long suffering Sharks fans watching this team push to the brink by a great team. I mean, yeah. that's what Vegas so, is. It is a great team. And by the way, like we've said, probably still going to be great next year.
So I want to destroy the Las Vegas narrative, because the only time the Sharks get to be represented as, hey, look at this team who's doing well, is when we get to the conference final. Then it's like, oh, maybe this San Jose team isn't totally crap. Well, you know, maybe they're not going to choke. Maybe they're actually, you know, decent at this game of hockey. It's like, especially watching from Europe, it is so frustrating seeing the media coverage and being like,
yeah,
a great team scored a bunch of goals, but ultimately lost to some other guys who were wearing teal or something.
And that's the Vegas narrative, though, right? Like, the league wants this to happen too, and the media want this to happen too, because it's such a great story for hockey. The Sharks aren't. The Sharks aren't a great story for hockey. This is a team that has been perennially good, but not good enough,
yep,
and is missing its marquee player anyway. And honestly, after tonight, isn't as good as Vegas, period.
Wasn't as good in this game.
I'm not so sure I buy into the narrative that DeBoer is trying to sell us, that this team has been getting better every game and should be should be winning this series. The way the Sharks played tonight pisses me off, and it makes me question whether this team belongs on the same ice as Vegas. I'll be honest.
The only Sharks narrative that that has driven me nuts through this series has basically been the and I know we've talked about this a lot this season, and we've kind of in some respects gone back and forth on it, but is the idea of, like, you know, the way they always frame the Sharks is their windows shut or shutting. And I think when you see players like Hurdle stepping up, guys like Couture, you know, again, I think for the third year in a row in the playoffs, really stepping up. You see guys like Sorensen, LeBanc on and off, you know, obviously Jones and Dell too. Dell's been fine. You know, it feels like credit to Wilson, because Wilson has been doing an excellent job of transitioning the team. And so as someone who follows the Sharks, do not feel that our window is necessarily shutting as much as it's about as open as it was before. And we're going to have to see in this offseason whether it opens more or stays even or what. But the whole idea of, like, well, Marlowe's gone and, you know, Thornton's old. It's like, yeah, okay, well, guess what? Neither one of them have really contributed this season, obviously. So here we are.
The future for the Sharks is bright.
Yes.
I'll go through this really quickly. Tierney and LeBanc scoring 40 points at their ages indicates that both of those guys have the potential to get to 60 or 65 points next year.
Hey, Colin, can I ask you a question, Colin? Are you surprised he didn't start with Meyer? Because you know he's going to rub it in our faces.
Timo Meyer at 38 points at his age could go anywhere. But I think he's going to go up just because of the type of game he plays. All three of those guys, I think, did even better than we should have expected from them this year.
Yes.
And the trajectory is positive for all three of those guys, right? I said Tierney, right? Tierney, LeBanc, Meyer, yes. The three of those guys. Bodker is what he is, and I think the Sharks would be better off with a different player with his skill set, but whatever, I can't control that. And it's not really time to talk about the offseason yet, because we're going to have plenty of time to do that next Friday.
Right.
If the Sharks don't play the two best games of their season Sunday and Tuesday.
Well, guys, then how about this? Why don't we transition to the three stars of the week? Colin, you and I have not been on the podcast together in a while. I'm going to throw to you first.
Three stars. I'm going to be really weird with my third star. I'm giving it to Carlson.
Oh my gosh, Ben, we're going to have a different
thing. Keep going, Colin, keep going.
So, my reasons are that Carlson seems every time another team, the other team seems to get really pissed off and just wants to start killing people. Somehow Carlson seems to be the cause. Like he seems to be that player that other teams hate, and he's always getting into it. I don't know what he's doing in terms of helping the team actually win games.
Right.
But
he is a key person on the penalty kill. Not that the penalty kill has been fantastic in the series.
Exactly. It's like you forget he's playing so often. And I mean, I love Gaudreau.
I mean, that's enough to be your third star. Keep going.
No, but think of it. Think of the fact that this guy has contributed something in that our fourth line has been amazing. And, you know, we've seen great things coming out between Carlson, Sorensen, and Fair. And yet it seems like Fair and Sorensen are being magical, but you can't have a non-player on a line and have the line still do well. So Carlson's doing something. I don't know what it is. But
can I just say I'd rather have Gaudreau in for Carlson?
That's all I would about that. Too. Yeah, I agree. But I can't, because I can't identify what it is that Carlson's doing to just draw the attention of other players. Because let's face it,
I totally hear where you're coming back. Go ahead and move on.
So you know, Carlson is pissing people off, and then they're going and they're penalizing Hurdle. Which, okay, this is not a winning overtime method. And I think if Carlson were to be changed out for Gaudreau, we would see some dynamic go away from the games. And
I think, to be perfectly honest, the Sharks would lose something from their penalty kill to make that change. Yeah. But I think they would gain something at 5-on-5.
Yep. So my second star, and yeah, this. So second star is going to Sorensen, and my first star is a tie between Hurdle and Couture.
Okay,
I'm gonna go. Sorry, man.
No, come on.
My turn.
You son of a. It's fine. I drag on you about
the. Kyle, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast while you've been out, but Ben and I have a habit of picking the exact same three stars in the exact same order. Yeah. We might not hear Ben. We might not hear my.
Are you gonna have Martin Jones in there anywhere?
No.
Okay. Well, then we have the same three. Go on.
we'll see if the order's there. Maybe. Who knows? We'll just it's a mystery.
Just
my third star is going to be Sorensen. Because
okay, we're good.
I've really liked his. I just played the entire series, so I'm kind of spreading it across there. But in general, you know, I've already talked about him. I don't need to go.
Sorensen's been great. I'm not going to dispute you.
He right now. I mean, you know, who knows where we will put him moving forward? But I will say that, like, to me, he very much represents from at least a fourth line perspective what the Sharks need their fourth lines to start looking like, which is, you know, when you're coming off of like the Mike Brown era. John Scott era, you know, this, and it's not, obviously it's not just him, right? Because Fair's been doing great for the most part. Like in general, it's just one of those things where it makes me happy to have a fourth line where that dude's on it. Now, my second star, and Ben, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is where you and I differ, but probably not. My second star is going to be Hurdle.
We will differ, but just because Hurdle is my number one.
Okay, got you. And then my first star is going to be Couture. If you look especially at tonight's game, all three of those goals really set up by Couture. He has assists on all three of those. When you look at two of the four goals the night before, again, Couture, he is such a huge factor these playoffs for the Sharks. He is, you know... one of the things that was brought up about Vegas as maybe being a weakness going into the series, if anyone brought up anything, was that Vegas was in a lot of ways looking like they kind of had, you know, three second lines in a third line, or they kind of point out, well, they don't have quote unquote star power or the experience or whatever. And I really feel like what we're seeing from Couture, and we've seen this kind of building, is that guy is just stepping up and carrying the team when the team needs it, and very consistently at that. And that's not like, Pavelski to a degree does as well. Kane has his moments for sure, but like Couture is like Ben. You brought it up earlier. If Couture is not in the lineup, we're effed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's why he's my first star.
Okay. So I'm torn with my third star. I'll be honest. I think I'm going to give it to Mark Edward Vlasic.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has been superb, not on the scoreboard, but just defensively in this,
you mean,
this
series.
Can I point? Can I point out when he took? I mean, I don't know whether or not he wears wrist guards because a lot of players do not flashing. But when he took that puck in the wrist, gosh, I almost passed out.
Yeah, Vlasic. Without Vlasic, it's particularly in the games at home, or actually games 2 and 3. I think this series is already over. Period. I'm also tempted to give the third star to Timo Meier. I mean, he only has the one goal on the power play in game 3 compared to the rest of this week, but he's just such a physical presence on this team and in a way that I actually think is more sustainable than Kane is. And Kane has largely been kind of invisible, particularly tonight. So, and Meier was not invisible tonight. He's been drawing penalties. He scored a goal a couple games ago. Particularly the drawing penalties part has been an important part of his goal or his game. So I lean towards both of those guys, but I think I tilt to Vlasic for third. Kocur gets my second star. He has been all over the place, and he was in each of the scoring plays for the Sharks tonight with an assist. And again, like if he is actually hurt, this team is done.
Yep.
Period. But let's hope he's not. But Hurdle has been for me the MVP of the Sharks in the playoffs. Period.
Yeah.
So he's my first star. And we've talked about why. I mean, the guy, you just cannot get the puck off of him. He scored huge, huge goals, even when he's partly been the guy who made the mistake in game 4 that he had to make up for. No, game 3 that he had to make up for. But I mean, he scored the tying goal in that game, pushed it to OT. He scored the next to tying goal tonight. The next to tying goal tonight with a just in the right place. He also was involved in the passing that led to Bodker's goal, or at least like the mess in front of the goalie there. So, I mean, without Hurdle, again, I feel like this series is over. Without Vlasic, without Couture, without Hurdle, the Sharks are already out of the playoffs. So I think they all are.
Yeah.
I love them. I love them all.
And by the way, people, you don't hear Ben say he loves stuff often, so that is a big thing.
Yeah, so far all I know that Ben loves are his bunny rabbit and the Sharks.
And as I've said, I don't think it's the right time yet to do the postmortem for this team, but DeBoer's got to go.
Yeah.
I'll leave him on that, Ben. Why don't you?
Yeah, I'm serious. I'm 100% serious. DeBoer has got to go.
Because here's my thing. I do not think that Vegas is full stop the better team. Like I felt the Penguins in the Stanley Cup we lost, they were flat out better. Like nothing. I just think Vegas uses itself better. It's better run. It's better.
Let me butt in because you're going to go on another rant, Ben. I can.
No. It's a short point. I promise. It's a short point. The Vegas, from a physical talent level, is not better than the Sharks.
Okay. Agreed.
But system and coaching, they are.
Agreed. Yeah. Okay. Period. Agreed.
Period.
I was going to say, who knows how these next couple of games will shake out, but I will say this. This was a winnable, this will have mm-hmm. been a winnable series for the Sharks if they do not advance. And honestly, despite
it's still winnable.
Well, that's why I said it. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just saying, if they don't advance, this would have been a winnable. I also want to point out that, this has been, regardless of what happens before, I obviously hope that we continue to advance. But either way, I will say this has been, in a lot of ways, a fun series. And second round, my biggest frustration going into this game was actually that Boston somehow managed to lose their game in OT, because every series would have been tied 2-2 in every series in the second round. The first round, I will say, this first round was probably one of the least entertaining for me across the board in a while.
Yeah.
But the second round matchups have been perfect.
I mean, this series to go to 7.
Yeah.
Not just because I'm a Sharks fan and going 7 means that they won game 6, but because this series has been great. I'm mad at DeBoer and the stupid decisions he's made.
Yep.
But I'm not devastated the way I have been in Sharks series in the past when the Sharks lose a game. Partly because this has been winnable series, and also because it's been fun games to watch, even with the Sharks struggling to win.
Yep.
I mean, you don't see... I mean, again, if the Sharks lose here, it's not because they don't have the right talent level or the right players. I mean, you don't get three goals in the last 10 minutes of the game against a team as good as Vegas if your players aren't hungry, resilient, strong players, right?
Yeah.
I don't know where they were for the first 20 minutes. Well, actually, the middle 20 minutes of this game, maybe the middle 30 minutes, you know, from basically the 18-minute mark to about... you know, 10 minutes left in the game, but this even was a winnable game. And again, one key decision by the dipshit coach pretty much cost them their opportunity.
Yeah. And it cost them the momentum stepping out. Cause if they had just finished it out, you know, 5-on-5, grinding, slamming on the goal, maybe pulling Dell in the heat of the play to have the swinging winger, you know, breaking in, that's a different loss to walk away from than a loss where you basically set the stage for yourself to cut your own throat. So, you know, good job, DeBoer.
You know, can I say one more thing? Because this actually is reflecting on a question that was, or not a question, but a comment made in chat.
Yeah.
You know what's really amazing about this Vegas team?
What?
Is remember Gerard Gallant, who's their coach,
yeah,
was the guy that the sort of analytics-oriented Florida team basically left on the tarmac.
Yeah.
Like, they fired him.
Right.
They fired him, like...
On the runway.
And then didn't even, like, get a cab or whatever for him to get to the airport, right?
He didn't load his bags, I remember.
And the narrative there was that he was an old-school guy who wouldn't do what the analytics-focused team wanted to... or analytics-focused organization wanted him to do. And then, of course... you know, they just devolved into a mess.
Yep.
That guy came into Vegas and utterly changed his approach, probably based on the talent and basically probably what his GM wanted him to do. And that's a minor miracle on its own.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I mean, like, good on you, Vegas. Good on you. I wish your fans were less obnoxious, but you know, good on you.
They're also drunk at like 4 o'clock in the morning. They're coming from the casinos then. Give a break. They just lost all their money. They managed to pull the credit card around their neck out of the slot machine long enough to attend a hockey game. Come on, be nice.
Good on them. That's all I'm saying.
Well, this has been a long podcast. Hope you all enjoyed it. Guys, I think it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah. Here's hoping we get to come back together next Friday and talk about the Sharks winning a 7-game series.
I want to get to 100 podcasts this season while the season's still active. Oh, damage.
Man, that's pretty low odds, but let's hope.
So, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Yes, Colin.
If we win a cup, does DeBoer stay next year?
Of course.
Well, obviously.
We changed everything
we've been saying.
Oh, I see. I mean, Okay.
It's not going to happen.
Colin, do you follow this podcast?
The real question is, if the Sharks don't win this series, do the Sharks move on from DeBoer? And I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either.
They should, but I don't think they do.
Agreed.
I think there are enough excuses built into where the Sharks are. Oh, Jumbo got hurt. Oh, we had lots of injuries. Oh, Pavelski has a ruptured spleen we haven't told anybody about. Like, that's exactly how it's going to go, as always. So.
Aww. Well, goodbye, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.